Welcome to Bike for Life Stories. Stories from a lifetime of cycling all over the world that will amuse, teach, inspire, and make you think. Written and narrated by Roy M. Wallach. Today's featured story is Shedding Tears at Paris-Roubaix. What it's like to ride the world's most jarring race. I'm crying. Tears are streaming down my face, soaking my cheeks, dripping off my chin, and to my amazement, they won't stop. After all, I'm not a big crier normally, and I'm not sobbing or wailing or blubbering or even whimpering. I'm not in pain or burned or bloodied. I'm not in the midst of some wrenching emotional distress or thinking about the loss of a loved one or a close friend or even reliving some painful episode like the day that Seinfeld went off the air. I'm crying because I'm riding a bike, an act that normally brings me exquisite joy. But right now, my bike is bringing me something else. Vibration. Vibration so endlessly and blurringly violent that I can barely hold the handlebars, switch gears and see straight, and even hear myself think. My head is jackhammering like a bobblehead doll on the space shuttle, re-entering the atmosphere at 28,000 miles per hour. It's shaking so hard, I finally realize, that it is literally shaking the tears out of my eyes, as in the way that a bully turns a little kid upside down by his ankles and shakes the money out of him. It's the cobblestones. Cobblestones are the shaped, semi-flattened stones and bricks that the Romans used to build roads a millennium or so before the invention of asphalt. We're riding on them, on miles and miles of narrow, one-lane farm roads, uneven and muddy and slick, in the relentless spring drizzle of northern France, laced with 3-inch deep ruts, 6-inch bumps, and random puddles of mud and water. These ancient roads are made worse by the loaded farm trucks that have pushed down the edges of the cobblestone roads, raising the center so high that car bottoms scrape on places where it peaks. 100 times I thought I was falling. Adding to the stress, I'm falling behind, lagging the group. Rattled out of my mind, tears squeeze out of my ducts like water wrung from a towel. I couldn't understand why any sane person would want to race Paris-Roubaix. Paris-Roubaix is a classic one-day bike race that has been run in France since 1896. It's classic for one reason. A fifth of the 161-mile course, which begins in the Paris suburb of Compiègne and winds north almost to Belgium to the town of Roubaix, is over 26 sectors of cobblestones. Although the French name for them, pavé, sounds pleasant enough, cobbles are nasty things. Dozens of riders crash every year. It is the bloodiest bike race in the world. It's no wonder that Lance Armstrong hasn't done Paris-Roubaix. And it's no wonder why a famous movie about the 1973 race, the last of three victories here by the great Eddie Merckx, is entitled A Sunday in Hell. After completing my Friday in Hell, I sat down at dinner at the plush Dolce Chantilly Hotel with my companions on our 47-mile adventure. A half dozen other U.S. journalists brought here by Specialized Bicycles to report on Paris-Roubaix and test ride the 2006 Specialized Roubaix road bike. Billed as the vibration killer, the bike was designed for masters riders and others interested in comfort as well as performance. Hence its long wheelbase, carbon frame, tall head tube, and odd see-through Zerts urethane inserts in the fork, seat post, and frame, which are meant to absorb shock. The bike was to be used in the race on Sunday by the Gerold Steiner team featuring German cycling star Michael Rich. Having ridden only Roubaix on the cobblestones and around Chantilly, a famed horse breeding and racing town, we don't know how much shock they actually absorb compared with normal bikes. But 2 days later, Rich and the other pros told us that it definitely worked. Of course, the conversation at the dinner table centered on the cobblestones. No one else cried like I did, and all looked at me with pitiful curiosity as I recounted my tear-stained tale. But everyone was thrilled. We had trod on the same turf as the great Merckx, as three-time winner Francesco Moser, and as Gilbert Duclos LaSalle, who won twice in a row in 1992 and 93 on a specialized RockShox suspension fork at age 40. We were actually passed on the course by pros training for the race on Sunday. Like cobblestone scientists, we dissected the different types of cobbles. The round, tall, brutal ones that looked like stones from a river, they gave you a good thump. The more chiseled bricks arrayed in the interlocking arches pattern similar to that used in city streets. They massaged you with an easy flutter. We debated the best technique. Ride on the ridge on the top, some said. Ride on the edges, said others, where the gaps have been filled in by dirt. Ride in big gears as fast as you can to smooth out the gap between the stones, we all agreed. As it turns out, the stones actually force you to push the pace. The average winning speed here for the last couple decades is around 40 kilometers per hour. After dessert, we gathered around Joe Plankert, a boisterous 34-year-old Belgian television and cycling star, currently banned on drug charges that he claims are bogus. My phone was tapped in 2003 by the police who took my computer and thought I was mafia, he explained. They arrested me for talking about, but not possessing, EPO, the illegal red blood cell thickener. Plankert's bike racing bloodlines run deep. His father won stages in the Tour de France. His uncle Eddie Plankert won Paris-Roubaix in 1990. Joe did the race six times himself and finished second in 1997 and fourth in 1999. Three of my teammates did nothing to help in 97, he complained. A French guy, Frédéric Gourdon, shot by me right near the end to win. How best to ride the cobbles? Plankert's advice didn't surprise us. Use the big chain ring. Let the bike dance on the stones. Don't muscle it. Don't panic. Follow your bike. Flow. No abrupt movement so you don't catch your wheel on something. Hold lightly on the handlebars. In other words, don't slow down. The faster you ride the cobbles, the smoother they feel. Also, a lot of weight is good, to a point, he said, casting a subtle glance at my 185-pound bulk. Working as a guide for Yellow Jersey Tours, the company that organized our outing on the Paris-Roubaix route that day, Plankert had given me a small-of-the-back assist up one of the longer paved climbs to catch me up to the skinnier members of the pack. It is good to be heavier to keep control on the stones. I am considered heavy at 74 kilos, so very good for the race, he said. That's 165 pounds, a veritable Reuben stuttered on wheels. Sunday, April 10. Newspapers blared the news of Prince Charles' wedding yesterday to Camilla Parker Bowles. Paris-Roubaix would begin at 11 a.m. here in Compiègne, a town made famous as the site of the railway car signing of the armistice that ended World War I in 1918. When the Germans overran France again in 1940, Hitler made a point of coming to town, doing a little jig in the same rail car, and then ordered it taken back to Germany and burned. It's cold here. Northern France in April is a four-layer affair: shirt, vest, fleece, and rain shell. As the pre-race crowd of thousands jammed the streets, I head for the giant white media tent that offered food and warmth. On the way, I run into jocular TV commentator and seven-time Paris-Roubaix veteran Bob Roll. Being ugly, stupid, and impoverished isn't all bad, Roll quips, when you can tell chicks you're a bike racer. At the tent door, I'm introduced to Richard Véronique, now retired seven-time Tour de France polka dot jersey winner for best hill climber. The hoopla and history apparently got to him, and he had regrets he never tested the cobbles himself. "I wish I had done this," he says, sadly, "but I didn't want to jeopardize the tour." Will Lance feel the same way someday? Once inside the tent, I see a small crowd gathered around a handsome middle-aged man. "Who's that?" I ask the self-appointed interpreter who had adopted me a few minutes before. "Why, it was 5-time Tour de France winner Bernard Hinault, who started Paris-Roubaix 9 times and finished 3. "I don't like this race," he says, surprisingly. "It is a shit race. I fell 7 times but did not get hurt. But I always tell myself, I will do it until I win it." He did in 1981. As for riding tips, Hinault says there were none except experience. "You have to do it several times to get used to it," he says. "No rules, just flow. Use a wider tire, 23C to 28C, and go as fast as possible to flow over the stone smoothly." Before Hinault leaves, I have one more question. "Did you ever cry?" As I recount my story, he just shakes his head and looks at me as if I'm a silly American. As the riders gather to be announced one by one near the start line, some bikes show odd customizations. Burly 20-year-old box section rims, physique saddles with 2 or 3 inches of foam taped over them, giant 49-tooth chain rings and top of the handlebar brakes, like those on some beginner road bikes. The applause rises as the names ring out. Tom Boonen, 24-year-old Belgian, 9th in 2004, had just won the Tour of Flanders the week before and is practically guaranteed a win here. Sweden's Magnus Backsted, the 2004 winner, is here, along with sentimental favorite Andre Toffi of Italy, who won here in 1999 and is doing his last race in Europe. A loud cheer goes up for American George Hincappie, Armstrong's Discovery Team lieutenant, who has finished 4th here 4 times and was 8th last year. He wants this race badly. The gun sounds and the chase begins, the chase of our van hoping to catch the riders at 3 or 4 sectors of the pavé, then beat them to the finish line at the velodrome in Roubaix. The cobblestones bring out farmers and suburbanites, women in high heels, priests and kids, and in a way brings out their best and their worst. They line the most treacherous parts of the course, where the pavé is broken, obscured by mud, or 2 feet higher in the center than at the edge, not overtly hoping for a bloody fall, but not wanting to miss it if it happens. A big one happened on the 6th sector. 10 riders crashed hard in the mud and rock, including 2003 winner Peter van Pentegem and teammate Tom Steels. Unlike other teams, the Belgians were able to continue a minute after Steels was ferried a new bike. They bailed 40 minutes later, their bodies bloodied but functional. Others weren't so lucky, as the scream of sirens and whir of ambulance lights attested at our first stop. I missed that crash, but my journalist pals saw the aftermath and said it wasn't pretty. We stopped at several other sectors of pavé, gawked in awe at the blur of Lycra rumbling by at dizzying speed, and warm-heartedly cheered for the courageous laggards who came by 5 or 10 minutes after the pack. Seeing the riders is a rush, but it's hard sometimes to figure out what's happening without Phil Liggett on a TV screen explaining who's who, although rumor has it that he gets it wrong 25% of the time anyway. With an hour to go in the race, our driver, Frederick Donnell, a U.S. resident, declared that he would give us the ride of our lives. "I am a native of Roubaix. My grandmother still lives here. I know every back road and alley. You shall see." What ensued was a madcap dash over the last 40 kilometers of the course itself, with Fred pleading with unrelenting cops at 4 checkpoints, and voila! miraculously getting them to open the officially closed gates of the course. As we bored in Roubaix, crowds of thousands waved, cheered, pummeled, and rocked our van as we sped over the last sections of pavé. No one knew who we were, but we were passengers on Mr. Fred's wild ride, running the gauntlet like rock stars, white-knuckle hands clutching seat backs and handles and heads nearly banging the ceiling as we steamed full speed into the pavé potholes the riders would face a few minutes later. We popped into town 100 yards from the velodrome and raced into the stadium on foot to watch the 3 leaders on the giant TV screens. As the helicopter buzzed in the distance, indicating the trio was scant minutes away, I stood to the right of a beautiful mid-20s woman with a baby. Photographers were shooting her as she intently watched her husband on the screen. It was Hincapie's wife, supposedly a former podium girl he met at a race. In seconds, the New Yorker surged into the stadium with Boonen and Spain's Juan Antonio Flecha glued to his tail. They rode high on the track as they looped the 500-meter oval. Then Boonen darted down the last half lap and won by a few feet. Boonen was euphoric. He is a hero to his people, the Flemish, the Dutch-speaking half of Belgium, who adore this race and have won it often. Hincapie, in the same time of 6 hours, 29 minutes, and 38 seconds, took second, his best finish ever at his favorite race. But he couldn't hide his disappointment. "I thought I had enough to win. Winning here remains my dream," he said a bit sadly. I didn't ask Hincapie if he cried, but knowing a bit about what he went through, I wouldn't be surprised if he did.